Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This hour on The Brian Lehrer Show, New York Times columnist Gail Collins, and we continue our fall arts and entertainment preview series today. It's the movies, and we'll get right to Gail Collins. Just give me 60 seconds to do my duty here and remind you that we are in the home stretch of our fall membership drive. It ends Wednesday, and if you're just joining us, we're in an all-the-money-in-half-the-time day, so if we can raise $170,000 by noon, the money that would be typically donated for the full day during the drive, you would get Leonard Lopate and the rest of the day fundraiser-free, and we're almost on pace to make that goal. Keyword almost. So if you want to support the station anyway, please do it now. We have $45,000 to go to make a total of $170,000 in donations since 6 o'clock this morning. And if we make this goal, we can give you the afternoon off from the pledge drive for when you listen later on. So maybe make a credit card pledge of $5 or $10 a month to help us pay the bills while you're listening to the show this hour, and we'll accomplish our all the money in half the time by noon. Thanks a lot for considering it. One of the little ways that we try to do efficiency in the pledge drives, and we'll give you the afternoon fundraiser free if we can get the day's goal in by noon. So hopefully that's your part, and everybody else who's listening right now who hasn't contributed yet this year. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And really, thanks a lot. $45,000 left to go. We can do this if everybody who hasn't donated yet this year does it right now. Now, 30 issues in 30 days, issue 23, Women and the Presidential Race, with New York Times columnist Gail Collins, author of the book, When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present. Hi, Gail. Welcome back to WNYC. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Good to be here, Brian.
It's kind of amazing, actually. We scheduled a women's issue segment for this day back in August. You remember? May remember, that's when my producer called you up.
I do.
It was August.
That,
yes. You know, on October 22nd, we're going to be doing, right? And here we are 2 weeks before the election, and it seems like the whole campaign is coming down to 300 waitress moms in Ohio. Does it seem that way to you?
Well, it's certainly all about Ohio. I can't not give you that. You know, the gender gap thing is very interesting, and you know, it's back again this year. I don't know that it's remarkably different from the last many elections. When we finally come down to it, I suspect you're going to find the same kind of gap you found 4 years ago and 8 years ago and so on and so forth.
Let me play two short clips, one of Obama, one of Romney, that I think exemplify the conflictedness that some swing voting women feel and the way each candidate is trying to win their votes. Romney first.
This is a presidency that has not helped America's women. And as I go across the country and ask women, what can I do to help? What they speak about day in and day out is, help me find a good job.
When we talk about child care and the credits that we're providing, that makes a difference in terms of whether they can go out there and earn a living for their family. These are not just women's issues. These are family issues. These are economic issues.
So we heard Romney campaigning in the Norfolk, Virginia area, Obama from last week's debate. Gail Collins, how do each of those clips play to what's politically real in women's lives today?
Well, what Mitt Romney was going to have to do about virtually everything was to say, you know, I can do better with the economy. That's his one big thing. It's his thing. I was talking the other day to the woman who had asked the question at the town hall about gun control and who was an undecided voter, and she's really hated Mitt Romney's response, which was to start talking about the problem of single parents and you know, single mothers, and she kept saying, why is he yelling at the single mothers? I asked him about guns. But she wasn't totally, utterly ready to say that she would vote for Barack Obama because she said, well, you know, the economy is still the big thing. Maybe over the next 2 weeks, Romney will come up with a more credible plan to fix it, and then I'd have to look at him again. So there's always that thing out the side.
And I think we hear in those clips a reflection of the polls. Romney knows that 70% of women list the economy as their number one issue, not reproductive rights or other so-called social issues. But Obama emphasizes that for women, things like child care and other so-called women's issues are about economics. So do you think the line between the culture wars and economics is blurrier than many people think?
Yeah. The thing, if you look over the history of the gender gap, which really we started to notice back in the Reagan elections, the thing that at least I see, if you look at it over the long run, is that women tend to be more concerned about the social safety net than men do. Women tend to be more conservative in that conservative sense of, wait a minute, I want to know about what's going to happen to Social Security. I want to know what's going to happen to my daycare. I want to know what's going to happen here, what's going to happen to my parents, Medicare. Whereas men do tend to be more adventurous. Let's go. Let's bomb Iraq. What the hey? You know. So there is that sense, I think, of a more let's be careful what we do here kind of sense with women.
And your column after last week's debate was called Women and the Men Who Yell. And I see you have a theory that women don't vote for men who yell. What's that theory?
That's the absolute big theory. Women, and I first got it, you know, when Ted Kennedy was running for president, and he didn't seem to be doing very well with women, and I thought that was strange. But if you looked at the tapes, he's out there being all red-faced and, you know, yelling and screaming. And I truly do believe if you look at the history, grand trajectory of the gender gap in women voting over the last many decades, women will not vote for men who yell. This is why we were never going to have Newt Gingrich. We were never going to have Herman Cain. We were never going to have any of these people that, you know, look good for 5 minutes out there. Women will not vote for men who yell.
And yet, with the appeal supposed to be primarily to women in that second debate, the Times front page after the debate compared
them. They both yelled. Yeah.
Yes. The Times compared them to roosters and tomcats to describe all that alpha male posturing. I mean, outside
Yeah, I don't know what you do when both men are yelling.
Outside of a Dartmouth frat party, is that supposed to be attractive to women?
It's not. And yeah, I did run into a whole lot of women afterwards who said, oh, my heavens, Betsy, what's going on here with these guys yelling? But that's sort of the debate thing. I mean, that's going to continue to happen as long as we continue to have debates that are on TV in which the news territory, and particularly on cable, is framed always as yelling. And you have two guys doing the arguments. It's just going to be like that in the debates.
And you're right that the tenor of that debate would probably have been different had Hillary Clinton been in it. Do you really think so?
I do. I mean, there's just so many things that become different about these confrontations when, and some of them to men's disadvantage. I mean, we all remember poor Rick Lazio, who invaded Hillary's space during the first Senate debate, was never heard of again. You know, so there is and men have to watch themselves a little bit to not look too aggressive, which is good, I think. It makes for a calmer and more reasoned discussion.
Did you hear, by the way, that Tag Romney, one of Mitt's five sons, was asked his reaction to hearing Obama tell lies about his father, I think was the way he was asked it. And he said, it makes him want to slug Obama.
Well, there were all those Romney boys looking really fierce out there in the audience. It was pretty scary.
If only Michael Dukakis had said that about somebody once upon a time. Let's hear, and my guest is Gail Collins, New York Times columnist, who also wrote the book, When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present. Let's hear Romney and Obama again, both from the second debate. And this is about the issue that has been roiling the campaigns all year, the Affordable Care Act provision that requires all health insurance policies to include contraception coverage.
In my health care bill, I said insurance companies need to provide contraceptive coverage to everybody who's insured, because this is not just a health issue, it's an economic issue for women. It makes a difference. This is money out of that family's pocket. Governor Romney not only opposed it, he suggested that, in fact, employers should be able to make the decision as to whether or not a woman gets contraception through her insurance coverage.
I don't believe that bureaucrats in Washington should tell someone whether they can use contraceptives or not. And I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they could have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. And the president's statement of my policy is completely and totally wrong.
So Obama and Romney from the second debate, New York Times columnist Gail Collins, my guest. Gail, that Romney answer was one of the most interesting to me of the whole debate, because he seemed to say he doesn't oppose the Obama law provision when actually he does, right?
It's one of those Romney moments of which we have seen so many, in which he suddenly makes this sort of sweeping, sensible, mild-mannered statement that has no relationship to what he'd been saying for the weeks preceding. Which, I mean, I guess the good part of that is you really have no idea if this guy gets elected what he's going to do about
it. But I think in that case you really had to parse the words, because he said he wouldn't allow bureaucrats or employers to tell women whether they could have contraceptives. But I think that was only in the most literal sense of saying, now, dear,
they're
you
illegal,
may not
yeah.
use those things. He would still oppose the mandatory inclusion in health insurance policies, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's all about the not making them illegal. He's got an ad out now, too, that's very interesting, in which a woman said something like, you know, I heard strange things about Romney's position on abortion, but I found out that he does believe there should be abortion availability in cases of rape or incest. Or life of the mother. I mean, it's a very strange
Makes him pro-choice somehow.
Well, like somehow that should calm people who are worried about whether he's pro-choice. And also, I've never quite understood the rape and incest thing. If you are a person who believes so strongly that human life begins at birth, that you're willing to...
At conception.
At conception. That you're willing to force women to concede all their own controls over their body in order to protect that. I don't actually understand why you make an exception for rape or incest. I mean, that suggests to me that you don't actually really believe any of this stuff, but you're trying to parse the issue and make it least dramatic on all fronts.
On the other side of the coin, where is the line where swing voter women feel like the Democrats are pandering to them, offering things like free contraception coverage when, in a sense, nothing is really free, and framing the Republicans as waging a war on women, maybe trying to distract attention from the economic slump?
I don't think you can ever pander too much to a group as far as the group is concerned. I always enjoy the pander moments. You know, I remember long ago going to a thing in New York when candidates actually came here, listening to presidential candidates argue about mass transit. And I thought, wow, we're being pandered to. This is great. And I think it's the same way with women. You want to hear these discussions. You want to hear these arguments. You want to hear the one side yelling at the other side that they're not thinking enough about women's issues. So that's all to the good.
We'll continue with Gail Collins. Stay tuned for more. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Issues in 30 days, issue 23, Women and the Presidential Race, with New York Times columnist Gail Collins, author of the book When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present. And here again are Romney and Obama. This begins with Romney at the Values Voters Summit last October.
I support the Hyde Amendment, which broadly bars the use of federal funds for abortions. As president, I'll end federal funding for abortion advocates like Planned Parenthood. I'll protect a health care worker's right to follow their conscience in their work. And I will nominate judges who know the difference between personal opinion and law. It is long past time. It is long past time for the Supreme Court to return the issue of abortion back to the states by overturning Roe v. Wade.
When Governor Romney says that we should eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood. There are millions of women all across the country who rely on Planned Parenthood for not just contraceptive care. They rely on it for mammograms, for cervical cancer screenings. That's a pocketbook issue for women and families all across the country. And it makes a difference in terms of how well and effectively women are able to work.
So we heard Romney from the so-called Values Voters Summit, October of last year, Obama responding in last week's debate. Gail Collins will be talking about culture wars issues all this week in our series. Does Planned Parenthood, which of course came up there, play a special role in the culture wars? You hear the different framing of the organizations by the two candidates.
Yeah, it's interesting that Planned Parenthood suddenly became the target about a year or two ago in a huge way. And it's had enormous consequences around the country in places like Texas. That's where every week, every month, you hear about more clinics in poor neighborhoods that are closing because you haven't got any state money, you can't get any federal money through Texas anymore, and the Planned Parenthood clinics are all under siege. And it's really, really a huge issue for poor women. But, you know, one that I think a lot of middle class people just sort of embrace because it sounds so strange. The idea that your biggest priority is going to be to do in Planned Parenthood is weird.
And yet after the first debate, Romney seemed to close the gender gap to some degree, not to the point of a tie, probably, as one Gallup poll suggested. The Wall Street Journal poll that's out today still has Obama with a national 8-point lead among women. But did something happen in the first debate which made Romney look less threatening to women than they had seen him before?
Yeah, I don't think it was really women. I think what happened in the first debate was that for the country in general, you'd had this election that everybody had presumed would be very close. You had a president who had economic issues. Plus, he was not able to keep his central promise of getting rid of crazed partisanship in Washington, heaven knows. So everybody was expecting a tight race. And then Romney turned out to be such a terrible candidate early on that I think people shied away, that this was just all too strange. But what happened really particularly in that first debate was people got another look at Romney, said, oh, he looks like a sane, normal human being. And the natural division that I think we were expecting all along came back into focus. I don't think it was particularly women. It was in general moderate voters who weren't sure that this guy was not, you know, was up to the job. You know, found him to be more credible after that.
In the context of your book, which is a history of American women from 1960 to the present, is the debate the candidates are having this year more a sign to you of how far the country has come in the last 50 years or how far it has to go?
It's interesting. You know, when women, the question of whether or not women have closed the economic gap is one that we can have a really interesting conversation about after the election. But certainly women are the breadwinners now in many, possibly the majority of families, if you count all the unmarried moms, the single moms, and all the women who are making more money than their husbands, all the women whose husbands have been laid off temporarily. A huge number of families are supported by a woman, and that was certainly not true 50 years ago. And it was also certainly not true 50 years ago that women were expected to take a really great part in the elections. You know, they went to the conventions and they had dinners and everybody talked about the menus for the dinners. And that was sort of what the women's role was.
And now, really, changed. Really, one stat that I heard over the weekend, women are expected to cast 10 million more votes than men in this presidential election.
Yeah, they've been voting more since for almost the last 50 years, but nobody really thought that it was going to be that there'd be a difference in the way they voted until the 1980s.
And you talk about the increasing role of women as the breadwinners. The polls in past recent elections indicate that married women, especially married moms, are more likely to vote Republican than single women. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, what you've got with the whole women thing, that's such a huge category, that to say the women's vote is out there is actually really, you know, misleading. There's the women, African-American women who tend to vote more than African-American men are, you know, of course, very solidly Democratic. Single women, very, 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 very huge voting block for the Democrats. Married women, particularly married women, white married women with children, tend to vote Republican. So it's not one big clunk of people who all vote the same because of their X and Y chromosomes.
Can you do a thumbnail analysis of that white single versus white married difference?
I think that in part it has to do with youth. Younger voters tend to be more sympathetic to the Democrats and particularly to President Obama. But also it just tends to be how much you need a safety net, how much you're relying on the government to be there if you have troubles, how much you're relying on the government for things like child care. For things like Medicaid, maybe for your children, the CHIPS program, stuff like that. If you're a person who perceives yourself as living in a world in which government plays an important role, you tend to be much more sympathetic to the Democrats. And that certainly is single women.
Gail Collins, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about women and the presidential race. We haven't mentioned yet, and you've been on with us since the top of the hour.
I know what's coming.
Great pride in this. The binders full of women meme from the second debate. You
yes.
made fun of it as being okay as long as he doesn't strap the women to the top of his car with a dog or something like that. But is he getting too bad a rap for that inelegant phrase? He was trying to describe outreach for top positions, which I'm sure you would consider a good thing.
Yeah, if he had actually gotten the binders full of women's names, it would have been interesting. But somebody gave them to him. And, I mean, the most telling factoid on that front, as far as Mitt Romney goes, is not his strange imagery, which does come up quite a bit, but the fact that by the time he did very well in his early administration in hiring women to top positions, but by the time he left office, the percentage was lower than it had been when he came into office. And that reflects the fact that there was not one but at least two Mitt Romneys serving that four-year term as governor. There was the one who came in having been elected in a very liberal state, having run against, you know, a woman who was fairly liberal, and him making all the arguments that he made about how strongly he felt about things like the safety net, about gun control, that he favored abortion rights and so on. And then while he was in office, he morphed into the presidential prospect Mitt Romney, and he lost interest in the binder, among many other things.
And here's another Romney clip that was part of that answer that I think might have been more controversial than it was. This is just after the reference to the binders.
Now, one of the reasons I was able to get so many good women to be part of that team was because of our recruiting effort. But number two, because I recognize that if you're going to have women in the workforce, that sometimes they need to be more flexible. My chief of staff, for instance, had two kids that were still in school. She said, I can't be here until 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I need to be able to get home at 5 o'clock so I can be there for making dinner for my kids and being with them when they get home from school. So he said, fine, let's have a flexible schedule so you can have hours that work for you.
Romney from last week's debate. And, you know, Gail, we had a lively discussion in the office over that one. Was this good Mitt for offering flex time or bad Mitt for tagging working women as the ones who need to be making dinner?
Well, good Mitt and bad Mitt inhabit the same body. So it could have been both. I tended to give him a bit of a pass on that because in my travels, I run into so many women who have a desperate need for flexibility, who spend their entire lives dealing with the whole question of family and work. And even if you phrase it really inelegantly, which I think probably anything Mitt Romney is going to say may wind up that way, but I think that the idea that you have a sense that women in the workforce need a flexible schedule and that it's worth it in order to get women who tend to be in many areas better trained and more qualified than the male candidates, it's worth it to make your company more flexible. And that's true for men, too. We're in a whole new era right now in which family responsibilities are shared, but also the problem of somebody being home when kids come home from school looms larger and larger.
Last thing, tonight's debate is on foreign policy, and I'm sure they'll be back in Rooster and Tomcat and Ram mode. I think you compared them to Rams in your column, to show who can talk louder and carry a bigger stick toward the rest of the world. But if the end stage of the campaign is so much about unmarried white women in Toledo, to caricature, is there a set of foreign policy positions that would appeal to them to watch for tonight?
The thing that the women in general want is world peace. Women in general are really, really, really unenthusiastic about wars, particularly wars of choice in any way, shape, or form. And I think that both candidates are aware of that. And Romney has sort of flopped back and forth on the question of how aggressive he would be as a president, but it's something that it's kind of universal. Everybody be watching to make sure that nobody is going to decide to pick a country at random and invade it for personal reasons.
And that is our 30 issues in 30 days segment for today. Issue 23.
You didn't ask me about Dog on the Roof. I'm really hurt.
I did say that as long as you didn't put the Binders of Women on the roof with the dog. Was there something else you wanted to say about the Dog on the Roof?
No, the dog's good. He's still on the roof.
Still he's getting fed steak, prime rib. 30 issues in 30 days, issue 23, Women in the Presidential Race. We thank New York Times columnist Gail Collins, author of the book When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present. Thanks a lot, Gail. I always appreciate it.
Great to be here.
And tonight is the last debate. I'll host a pre-debate call-in for us and the swing states tonight at 8 o'clock. Tune in for that. And then during the debate, we will have a live chat going on at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Also, another rousing episode of Debate Bingo during the debate tonight. Coming up next, we continue our fall arts and entertainment preview series. Today, what's coming up at the movies? Stay with us.